Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
My thanks to this week's sponsor, Hayloft Plants Limited of Pershaw in Worcestershire. Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to exchange some news, views, a bit of seasonal advice and hopefully answer some of your gardening quandaries on the way. We had something of a showery start to last Saturday morning, but then by midday, you know what they say, rain before 7, shine before 11, the sun came out and with a little bit of breeze, it was dry enough that we could get the grass cut. Thank goodness it was getting up around my ankles. And I had a bit of help with John over the weekend, and we managed between us to get 3 of the compost bins emptied, and quite a bit of nice well-rotted material was stacked up on the veg plot, ready for winter digging. And of course, having cut the grass gave several hods of lawn mowings, which I like to put into the bottom of an empty bin before I heap some of the debris from summer crops and anything from the compost bins which haven't rotted as much as I would like. Once you get those 2 or 3 boxes of lawn mowings wet and green, they heat up very quickly and work like a firelighter. I've got one bin too that's completely empty, ready to be filled with fallen leaves, and they are beginning to come down at quite a rate. I mean, on Monday night, early Tuesday morning, we had a really sharp frost, and we've had 1 or 2 strongish blasts of wind, which is really bringing the leaves down. A bit of a frustrating start to the week. And I spent best part of 2 days, I would think, trying to cope with the paperwork and medical checks to fly to Holland for the Ellesmere Trade Fair. I've not been to that for 3 years, and it will be quite useful to catch up with what's going on the continent. And I've still got a form to complete to get back into Britain, so I hope that I'm back safely Thursday evening by the time you hear this commentary. I would certainly hope to have plenty of news. I see that there's been quite a detailed poinsettia trial. Yes, it's soon be that time again with the German company Dumann and Beacon Camp from Holland having quite an extensive trial, and I would hope to see some of their new introductions this week. Incidentally, if you think it's a bit early for the thoughts of Christmas and poinsettia, I have to tell you that if you can get a poinsettia that's been locally grown and home without it being checked in the cold on the windowsill, it will settle down and last much better than if you buy it in 5 or 6 weeks' time when the days are very short. You know, they're tropical plants and they like a nice bit of sunlight. And the best bet is to have them on the windowsill during the day and then just bring them into the room when you draw the curtains so they get that bit of extra warmth when they really need it at night. There's some speculation too about the replacement for the Director General for the RHS now that Sue Biggs has announced that she's stepping down from the job after 11 years next June. it certainly is a lively time in the gardening world, and the garden trade continues to break sales records on garden centres. Now, of course, they're beginning to switch heavily into Christmas, and I was interested to see at Meadowcroft Garden Centre at Wickford in Essex, they have a German market, stall after stall after stall. I mean, you could almost imagine that you were in one of those German towns that make speciality gifts, Christmas products, Christmas beers, even cuckoo clocks. There was a lot of fascinating stuff on display. If I'm reading the trade correct, the autumn bulb sales have been a little bit slow. I think the trend now is very much to buy them in pots, in bud, in the spring. I don't understand why. People probably impatient for colour, or don't understand that if you buy a dry bulb, it works out a great deal cheaper, and with a bit of luck, will last much longer. And when I say last longer, I mean if they get sort of settled in the soil, particularly narcissus and tulips, well, they'll come up year after year. Always, if you buy the largest bulbs, you want good big bulbs if you want to repeat flowering over a good number of seasons. There's still plenty of time to plant, particularly the bigger bulbs. I'm very pleased to welcome onto our podcast today one of my real heroes. I love people who can really grow plants. I mean, I'm surprised they don't shoot out of his ears and every other orifice, because his fingers are so green, it is unbelievable. I'm delighted to welcome John Massey from Ashwood Nurseries in Kings Winford in the West Midlands. Now, John, how are you today? How are things in Kings Winford? And could you just outline how you set off in this business? It's quite a remarkable story, I think.
It's a lovely day here, still incredibly mild. The autumn colour in the garden is, I just find this time of year so exciting. How did I set off? Well, really, it was my granddad's fault. At the age of five, he taught me to double dig. If you can imagine that he had four daughters and they lived in a two-bedroomed house. And so the daughters all slept in the one room. And Grandad used to grow all the vegetables for the whole year. He used to earth up the potatoes, the onions were strung. And then with the runner beans, we used to salt them and always have our own runner beans for Christmas Day. So he talked my parents into letting me have a little plot of garden where I grew vegetables. I used to sell them at the local shops and then raise money for the seeds of other plants that I wanted to grow.
Amazing. But then from that very good background, how did you actually start in the industry?
Pure luck, as most of the things with me. My dad moved house and my mum wasn't keen to go right out in the country. Dad loved peace and quiet, where mum loved people around her, having been brought up sleeping four in the same bed, I suppose. Mum wouldn't let Dad sell our old house. Eventually, she talked him into going back. He'd rented it out for a time, and there was two-thirds of an acre in the old house, which Mum felt she could look after, where in the new place there were 6 acres, and Mum and Dad had got a gardener. So Dad went down to the local nursery, Ashwood Nurseries, the one day, to buy a roast steak, and he ended up buying the nursery to keep, as you do, to keep Mr. Silvers in a job instead of stopping him. I was still at school at the time, and I left school on the Friday and started at Ashwood on the Saturday. My mum and a home help ran the nursery for the couple of months while I was still at school because Mr. Silvers didn't like it at all. It was very quiet in those days. And I used to do a lot of garden maintenance, which I think is one of the best ways to learn. I've had no formal horticultural education, but I feel I've had some of the best private education in the world. People like Princess Sturzer taught me how to garden. We became friends because she loved hellebores and she used to come over. And I would never have started a garden if she hadn't introduced me to all her transparency pruning. She always used to say, it isn't what you plant, it's what you plant it with. And then there have been people like Percy Picton from Colwall, who I used to, if I felt a bit down, I would go and visit him and he'd be there in his potting shed and he'd tell me all about the plants he was growing. And in the end, he'd give you some of those plants and you'd have to go back and start to grow them. He gave me the first Louisias.
Amazing. But I mean, the names you're dropping, John, you know, to actually, as a young person, have the experience, Percy with Michaelmas daisies and all of the herbaceous, what a great plantsman he was.
He was just incredible. And like his son, the whole family, and the wonderful thing now is his granddaughter has got back into alpines. So I think there's nothing more exciting than seeing young people go bonkers with plants, you know. And Malvern is a very special place, but what Percy did there, it was, as you say, with the Michaelmas daisies, but it was with the alpines, and he used to grow a lot of different peonies, and he had this sort of greenhouse. He was always in there when I went, and he just loved to enthuse about all his different plants.
Well, John, for those people who haven't been to Ashwood Nurseries, and I would encourage them at the first opportunity to go, could you just describe it a little bit to us? I mean, it's not the perfect site for a nursery, is it?
No, we're a tremendous frost pocket, but the beauty is we're just off the main Kidderminster, Wolverhampton, the A449, but we're out in the country. I live behind the nursery in the garden, which, like, really, I've opted out of most of the work in the nursery now, other than the hepatica production. But the nursery's been going, well, 55 years, and I've still got four members of staff, including myself, who've been here over 50 years. The only problem is we're all getting older together.
Yeah, but when I visit, you've always got young folk knocking about there too, John. You've been a great mentor to young people. But when you talk about the frost pocket, when we turn in off the road, it's on a steep slope, isn't it?
Yeah, it is slope. As I say, it backs onto the Staffs Worcester Canal. But from a garden's point of view, the canal, it's a lovely curving canal. It dominates the garden, which I'm involved in most of all now. We get no rabbits, we get no deer in the garden because of the canal there and the main road further away. I often think of it as Camelot, and that I'm the luckiest person in the world. You know, it's very sandy, which gives you the drainage and hardiness. And also, because of the humidity I get from the canal, it's fantastic with hellebores and hepaticas, you know, which are two of my great loves.
Well, should we start, first of all, with the hellebores? Was it hellebores that sort of set you off on the breeding and improving of a particular range of plants? I mean, hellebores, we would have had Christmas roses and the Orientals, but they didn't flower very well when I first came into this business.
I think, well, hellebores, I think, are so popular because they're one of the first flowers to come into bloom in the spring. And they are incredibly hardy. I suppose it's like most plants. If you give them the right conditions, they're happy. I always feel with hellebores, they're best on a slope, probably growing between other deciduous plants. But like Helen Ballard used to grow them at Maithan Morven in a north border in very thick, heavy clay. But she used to raise the beds up so to improve the drainage. Like so many, like there are snowmelt plants. We call them garden hybrids now because of all the influences of the various different species to get the dark colours from Helleborus torquatus, the yellows from Cyclophyllus and Odorus. They're a breeder's dream.
But I mean, John, They're absolutely magic in your hands, because you took an enormous exhibit to the Chelsea Flower Show the third week in May, whereas these blooming things are usually in flowering in January and February. I mean, how on earth did you work that?
It's Kevin Belcher, who is the hellebore breeder, and he masterminded that stand. Like, I bought a second-hand freezer trailer, and we put them in October and kept them at about minus one, minus 1.5. We left all the foliage on to begin with, and then we'd spray them over with a mist once a week, and there was no lights in there. And the incredible thing, because we'd also done a display with hepaticas 2 years previously. With a snowmelt plant, if you suddenly bring it into warmth, all the flowers come together rather than over a period of a month. So you get this wow period, which I'd no idea was going to happen at all. You know, it was sort of... I thought we were doing Desert Island Disc today, and I was going to come up with my favourite song as Dancing in the Dark, because I think that's what I do most of the time. You know, luck favours the foolhardy who don't always think everything through. And but it worked brilliantly, and but it was all masterminded by Kevin Belcher, and I was only there to sort of help when he needed me.
Always too modest, John. You've mentioned hepatica several times, and I believe you've spent just a few hours scribbling a few notes about them. Can you first of all describe to my listener that doesn't know what an hepatica is, you know, what are these charming plants?
Hepaticas are a mountain woodland plant. They grow throughout the northern hemisphere, right the way through most of Europe, sadly not in Great Britain, but in North America and Canada, Japan, Korea, China, and basically along the Silk Road areas in Pakistan, sort of Kashmir. In my parents' old house, there was a rock garden, and it was probably the worst place you could put a rock garden, under a sycamore tree, probably over a 100-year-old sycamore tree, but there was a pool and a little waterfall. And the incredible thing was there were Hepatica nobilis, which is the European one, growing all through this rock garden. This was between 5 and 11 when I was there, age 5 and 11, not time 5 and 11. But it gave them what they wanted, which was full sun when they were in flower. They got the humidity from the pool and the little waterfall, and then dense shade after flowering. And also it was on a slope, so they got the good drainage, the shade and the humidity, which is so important with hepaticas.
John, they're one of the very first of the plants to flower, aren't they? And they're almost like primroses, but in pinks and mauves.
They flower along with the hellebores. Again, they're a snow melt plant. They love this humidity which the canal gives me. And the beauty is, when you see them in the wild, they're always growing on a slope. So, you know, 45 degrees in the fluffy woodland soil. And they've given me the sort of license to travel. I've seen them in North America, in Minnesota. I've been over to Kyrgyzstan to see Hepatica falconeri, which was very much like Scotland. It was a wonderful country. Japan, of course, is probably the epicenter of hepaticas, and China and South Korea, the Korean Peninsula. I was asked to write this book, believe it or not, about 20 years ago by Timber Press. And I said, well, I hadn't got the experience. And my friend in Japan, Tomo Mabuchi, who's a similar sort of age to you, he's the brains behind the book. And he keeps doing various investigations. And I managed to get a real trump card. One of my heroes, Roy Lancaster, agreed to write a comment for the back of the book, which, again, it makes it so special. But I can't believe how helpful everyone's been all over the world. Everyone's been fantastic with knowledge and photos and absolutely everything. It's really very, very humbling. Yeah,
John, I can't wait to see the book. And I spoke last night to Roy Lancaster, and he said what a delight it was to read, and that one John Massey jumped from the page. As every page he turned, he could hear you and see you in the pages. But I understand that the venerable Japanese gentleman is actually coming to Vienna next year with a bit of luck. Is that correct?
Well, Tomo had done work with Vienna University as a corresponding course. He'd never actually been there, but the lady who he worked with is still in charge at Vienna, and I thought it'd be wonderful for us all to meet up there. When I asked Tomo, first of all, he said no, and then 5 minutes later he sent me an email saying yes, he would come. So hopefully it's meant to be. I don't know if it's meant to be, it'll happen.
John, no matter what the season, when I visit your garden, there's colour. It's an absolute delight. Do you have any tips for our listeners today if they want to put colour, just as you've got it, in their garden in this time of year?
When we create a new bed, we try and concentrate on one or possibly two seasons. So, for instance, in the autumn winter bed, there's lots of different corners. I absolutely adore the Cornus sanguinea. There's Magic Flame and Annie's Winter Orange, and planted in amongst those are Nerines. There's also the autumn flowering snowdrops. There's been Colchicums, and then the spindles, the dwarf forms of Euonymus elatus, give you incredible colour. But we're busy at the moment. We're sort of changing the garden over from summer to winter. I'm still opening the garden every Saturday. And what we've been doing a lot of is pruning the trees, making sure that they're going to look at their best for the winter. To my mind, a winter garden starts with the way the trees are pruned, the transparency pruning, and the lifting of the canopies. And it's something that you have to do every year. And the other thing which we've just finished doing is jet washing all the birches. I always tell people, if they've had a ding-dong with the other half, it's a wonderful way of getting rid of frustration. It is going out there with a jet wash. I used to play a lot of badminton in my youth, and to knock hell out of a feather shuttlecock was another way of doing that same release. But we go round, so and jet wash, and even on some of the, especially cerula or prunus rufa, if you jet wash those, it just really makes them sparkle.
Now, is there any caution needed then? Those pressure washers can be quite strong.
I'd never jet wash a very young tree. You wait till it's got established, because the bark could be a bit raw and it would sort of like bruise it. But once they've been planted about 5 or 6 years, but especially with the birch and the prunus cellula, it really does bring them to life. And if the garden is very open, there might not be need to jet wash them. It's the algae forming on the trees which you're getting rid of, but it really does make the trees sort of say, hey, look at me.
John, what is the book going to be called?
My World of Hepaticas, John Massey with Tomo Mabuchi.
John, it's been an absolute delight to chat to you today. Can't wish you more success with the launch of your Hepatica book, and I can't wait to see a copy. Thank you very much for joining us today. An absolute delight.
Thank you, Peter. Wonderful to see you, and happy birthday. Don't drink too much.
My thought for the week comes from Nigel Colburn. I haven't spoken to him lately, but his quote, "Green fingers are made, not born. Success comes to all with practice." I'm afraid that's only too true. So if you're a little bit new to gardening and you've had one or two less than successful experiences, just stick with it. It's amazing what we learn with a little bit of practice. Look forward to speaking to you next week when, if all's gone well with my trip to Holland, I should have plenty of news to share with you.
There is no better group of plants for flower power than forms of the shrubby potentilla, producing seed.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My thanks to this week's sponsor, Hayloft Plants Limited of Pershaw in Worcestershire, to my producer, Rich Jarman, and of course, to you for listening.
catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.